Pawtucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. Text line, you want to be in touch with the show, 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program. Let us know what's on your mind. Still to come, Joey Clark about a half hour from now from News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery, where I was last night. More on that in a moment. Also, Scott Stothagen will be with us. He is our Republican Party chairman, but he's also formerly the House Majority Leader, but now chairman, but state representative from Hartsel, from Morgan County, will make time for us. So you'll want to stick around for that. Let's keep rolling here on the show. I guess we'll talk about this. Last night, Senator Britt did her, she held up, it was at Sweet Creek. We talk about Sweet Creek all the time, and it's not even a place y'all should know about because it's up in Montgomery. It was kind of a venue. It's really known more as a, it's a produce, farmer's market, produce stand. And it's on Highway 231. So a lot of Florida traffic, if you're coming from the Midwest, and you opt to go down 65 and you get to Montgomery and then you're headed toward, you know, the Panhandle are, you know, used to be kind of cutting a corner there. It's known as the old Florida short route. And it connects to I-10 and you get to I-10 and you go, you know, obviously down to Lake City, down 75, down to the rest of the peninsula. But right outside of Montgomery, Pike Road is Sweet Creek. And it's a farmer's market, but it's also served as last night's venue for Katie Britt's recognition of America's 250th anniversary. And, you know, it's a lot of who's who there in Alabama politics. Not many from this part of the state. I did see Jim Ziegler last night. Saw John Wall. Just a handful of lawmakers, as we mentioned, Scott Stothagen, Susan Dubose, who's really thrilled about the decision from the court earlier today, Ed Oliver. Some of y'all are big fans of him in this audience. Reed Ingram, who owns Sweet Creek, state lawmaker from Pike Road. Brett Marcus running in the 2nd Congressional District. Was there, but we, you know, candidates, Caroline Dobson, I believe, Catherine Robertson, who will likely be our next attorney general. Also, the new U.S. attorney, Thomas Govan, there for the Middle District. So that kind of is the vibe. The county chairs, a lot of the Farmers Federation chairs from each county. And she gave a pretty good speech. I always appreciate it when, like, she researched. It talked about the founding of the country, and it is founding on, didn't say Judeo-Christian principles, she said Christian principles. Which I think is appropriate. We should get her on. I don't know, the time permitting. We're kind of running short on time and space for guests before the 4th of July. By the way, tomorrow will be essentially Friday for the program. And we won't be on Fisher House, I believe, is doing the July 3rd broadcast. So no Jeff Poor Show. We'll spare your ears of that. But it was well done, and we're going to try to do a little bit of that tomorrow. We got two congressmen. I got Robert Aderholt, who's on the America 250 committee, and Congressman Gary Palmer, fellow Braves fan. It's been a rough month of June for Braves fans. I don't know. You know, you need baseball guys out there in this audience. I mean, I can't do politics all the time in my life. Some of you are like, stick to the issues. But, like, you do this all day, 12 hours, 13 hours a day, and it's sports and news, essentially, in my life. Some of it's youth sports. Mike writes, Bradley really has been a great guest to replace former chairman. He's obviously got good national insight, but is also solid on broad Alabama topics. Once these guys get past the election, once we get past November 3rd, we're going to have regular spots for the lieutenant governor, hopefully the governor. Both U.S. senators. I'm going to try to work these guys in once a month. Congressman Carl, if he's elected, has agreed to come on, I think, weekly. Sort of like our returning champion. We'll see if it's a much busier set of circumstances in Washington, D.C. But we're going to try to make that happen. But that's something to anticipate on this program. Things the way they are now, I want to have these candidates on as much as possible, but I do want to be like, at least give Democrats or other primary candidates the opportunity to come on as much. They don't always take me up on it. Some of these candidates wait till the very last day and then ask if they could come on, and it's like, okay, you could have been doing this for months. And then they come on and it turns out to be, well, that wasn't bad at all. But, this is such a long way off, but 6 months from now, it might start looking a little different with the way things go. Fire Dog, baseball's the only sport I watch. Each time I travel for work, I will find a minor league or major league baseball stadium and go see it. It's one of the few things I do by myself when I'm on the road, which isn't often. It's all my five-year-old wants to do is talk about baseball. And part of that is this, like, we go to a lot of Auburn football games, but they're terrible. The best game he got to go to was 3. An Auburn member beat Texas A&M in overtime, and we went on the field, and that was very exciting. And Auburn basketball's fun. Basketball's very easy to understand. Baseball he plays, so he relates to it. And we'll do it. We're going to do a couple of Braves games this weekend, actually. That's how I'm going to spend my days off. And then hit up a 4th of July event and be back here in Fairhope for fireworks. But I tell you what, man, I'm taking time off the end of July, and I'm really kind of looking forward to this. But we're going to try to hit a bunch of stadiums, but also going to try to hit Cooperstown. Some of this is going to be contingent on the weather, rain outs are always a possibility. Got to hit Chicago twice because the Cubs and the White Sox never play on the same on the same day, very rarely. I guess it happens, but not the allotted time. So essentially I got 2 weeks between the end of summer camp and the beginning of school. And we started this a couple of years ago. We just didn't want to hire a sitter for 2 weeks straight. So I was like, well, I got some vacation time, but I'd never take it. And we did the entirety of the Blue Ridge Parkway and the Skyline Drive, got to a Braves game, a Nationals game. We went and saw some of the monuments in Washington, D.C. Went to a NASCAR race in Richmond and it came on home. And then last year, got a little more aggressive. We went to Texas, went to a Rangers game, went to Oklahoma, went to Branson, Missouri, went to a Royals game, Royals-Braves game, went to Cardinals-Marlins game, and then crossed over to Cincinnati, went to Reds game, went to West Virginia, spent the night, came down, went to the Braves and Reds in Bristol at the Motor Speedway there. That got rained. Then we went to my hometown, my birthplace, Brevard, North Carolina. And the founder of that town is who we named our five-year-old. That's his middle name. The founder of the town's Probart Poor. Went and saw that, and then we went to Gatlinburg, went to Knoxville, and then Nashville, and then back home. So it's become kind of a tradition. Next year, little brother will get to come. He's a little young for it right now. But we minor league games. I've already been to a Shuckers game. I've already been to a Blue Wahoos game. Did all the Southern League stadiums. So there was something about this yesterday, but I got sidetracked. Why won't minor league baseball work in Mobile like it does in other places? Guys, I think the Montgomery Biscuits are kind of they could move. That could be a franchise that Mobile could get if it really wanted minor league baseball, because the attendance there is abysmal. It's a cool park. It's a part of an old railroad station, but just people just aren't coming to the games. But I think the mistake that Mobile made with minor league baseball was to putting that stadium where they did. And the idea was trying to compromise. You either got to go all in on a downtown waterfront venue, or you got to go all in on a suburbs venue and just have all the bells and whistles. The problem with the Hake, it was that it tried to do both. It was an easy to get to, but I mean, was it really that easy to get to if you're trying to get Baldwin County folks to a minor league game, or if you're trying to get West Mobile folks? They just split it in half. I think if you go one of those two paths, you just got to own it. You can't try to do both. Jason, good morning, Jeff. Does it seem like, regardless of him winning the recent election, there's a group of out there who won't be happy until they force Mayor Tony Kennan of Orange Beach out? I think he's done a good job personally. I think he's done, like, the results have to speak for themselves. Maybe you could have somebody without all the personal drama. But here's the thing, Jason, like, as long as there's keyboard commandos with a Facebook account, this is going to be a reality. Just something you're going to have to live with. It's who can navigate it, who could not make any unforced errors, not give these, I don't know, would these people have time for this? Any free shots on goal? That's always going to be a reality of Orange Beach politics. The problem is that stuff doesn't move the needle. Because you're right, Jason. The elections speak for themselves too. The people, all this chatter on Facebook is fine, or Light app or whatever, but the people there don't either read it or spend a lot of time on social media, and it doesn't really leave an opening or a lane for something to beat it. And you had a very good candidate with Jeff Boyd, and I mean, it wasn't even close. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Living on the road, my friend, was gonna keep you free and clean.
Counting flowers on the wall, that don't bother me at all. Playing solitaire till dawn with the deck of 51. Smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. Now don't tell me I've nothing to do.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning. Joey Clark coming up in the next segment, so stick around for that. 251-343-0106. Let's keep rolling on these texts here. Get these out of the way. Fire Dog, I was in Fort Wayne, Indiana for 2 weeks. Got to see 5-9 homestand on the minor league team, the 10 Caps. It was a little larger than the Bay Bears. It was packed every night. And, I mean, like the, some of the promotions, I mean, they got to be over the top, right? I don't think you'll ever get the city to pack a stadium out every night. And maybe it was just by virtue of what was the affiliation was the Padres and the farm system not being maybe as robust at the time. But some of the gimmicks got to be pretty clever. You got to make it something that is, I don't know. I mean, you got to essentially Savannah Banana is it up somehow. And that's just a reality for minor league baseball. I mean, it's fun to go watch these guys and evaluate their talent relative to the major leagues or big leagues. And you sense it. Like I go to the baseball games now, you can see command in the pitches and fielding and things like that, that they're working on. But, it's a fun experience. You go down and, you know, the players are more accessible. You get autographs, catch a lot more balls. Although Benjamin, my oldest he's a pro at batting practice balls, just getting the freebies at these games. Like that's his gig. I went, I've been going to Major League Baseball games for 30 years, probably a little more than that. 35 years. Never even came in with sniffing distance of getting a foul ball or anything. And he's been going for about 3 years now. This is his third season. And we had just a pile of minor league balls for sure, but some major league balls from Colorado, from Braves games. So it's become a fun thing for him. Ricardo writes, Mobile only wants to Mardi Gras. They do not want to baseball or hockey. I wish we had a baseball team. I would go more now than I'm past 50. Yeah, I mean, I might even like, you know, season tickets. They're not expensive. Place to go. Let your kids run around. Because a lot of times you go to these ballparks, these minor league ballparks, there's a playground, and they get to understand the game better. Squirrel Vereen writes, the Hank did not become surrounded with attractions and shopping mall till shopping is still too late if it would have mattered. I guess it's kind of neat that the kids stay interested in the American pastime of baseball. What with it being relatively slow at that age, I just wanted to play Star Wars. Well, you got to, I mean, you can cater it toward a, it's interesting. You see these ballparks do it different ways. So Huntsville, they put it in a place. There's not a whole lot out there, but they put a lot of like dining and, you know, nightlife-y kind of things. Knoxville is a great example. It's downtown. It's not near where the college scene is at the University of Tennessee, but it's in the downtown space. Chattanooga's moved out to the suburbs. They decided to go in that direction. I mean, we know Pensacola and Biloxi, I think, is kind of, you know, right there in front of the Beau Rivage. Really cool. That's a cool backdrop. You know, there's a bunch of different ways to do it. Columbus, Georgia, nothing really fancy there. They're the beneficiary of being in the Braves farm system, so you get a lot of that. And that's a hopping place when we went. I haven't been back, but I've been meaning to try to get back there. But Mobile needs to do something to incorporate it in its downtown portfolio or just build this destination place out in West Mobile or Baldwin County or somewhere that where people want to go to. I mean, what if they put the stadium like Spanish Fort? What if you had minor league baseball? It's close enough. You have to cross the bay. I don't know, because maybe there's ample land. But, you know, taxpayers would have to obviously invest in that. I don't know. You got to have a dog, bat boys, and baby races in the outfield for the minor league. And definitely good deals on food. Yeah, I think you could do dollar hot dog night. A lot of promotions. Fire Dog, I still have the ball. I barehanded a line drive on the third baseline at Dodger Stadium. My hand was bruised for a week. Worth it. That's pretty cool. So we got to do a West Coast swing eventually. We're kind of waiting on the Vegas Stadium to get done. It may or may not ever get done. But we'll do Phoenix, Arizona, but we'll do Vegas, San Diego, the two Los Angeles stadiums, and San Francisco. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
And it probably always will. And on the old town square, under the barbershop pole, they set me up in the chair.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. Text line, please utilize the text line 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the program, hit us up there. Let us know what's on your mind. Still to come, Alabama Republican Party Chairman Scott Steinhagen will be with us. That's in the 11 o'clock hour. So make sure you stick around for that. Joining us now, we do this every Wednesday. He is the host of News and Views in the Afternoon on News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery, my friend Joey Clark. Joey, good morning. How are you?
Doing great. Good morning to you, too.
Hey, thanks for making time. Well, you and I are both at the I mean, these political events are a dime a dozen. I guess this is a really more of a holiday one, and, you know, they happen around the 4th of July, but I like Katie Britt's speech last night, and I don't think she's given, like, sometimes she overdoes it, and this is very critical of me, but sometimes it's like a false earnesty or something to it, and you remember the State of Union response?
Yeah.
But I think this, that she's kind of figuring it out, and like, when she's, and last night was a very pro-Katie Britt crowd, but she felt comfortable, and she was kind of more of herself, you know. And I thought she did really well, especially to kind of tie in the nation's founding to Christian principles. We didn't say Judeo-Christian principles. We say Christian principles, and we Christian talked about principles. In that sense. And I, you know, to me, that was somewhat refreshing.
Yeah, no, I had the same takeaway. I had the same thought. We didn't even discuss it while we were sitting next to each other. I think if I had to coach her, sometimes she's almost nervous or trying to make up for the nerves by trying too hard.
Yeah.
And she did seem very relaxed, like her voice seemed more like the person you talk to just, you know, on the phone or whatever. And like, I thought the just the tour of the Capitol and saying, like, within the very architecture of our ideas and our concepts as a nation, but the very architecture of the buildings where we govern, all of this stuff is there that points back to our Christian heritage. It does stretch into the Old Testament. And I thought it was beautifully done. And I had a chance to talk to her. And I told her, do that more. Like,
yeah.
And it seems to be all the rage. J.D. Vance's new book, I read that over the weekend. He's talking openly about it. Josh Hawley's giving big sermons. Like, I think it's being welcomed more and more, especially on the right.
You know, I mean, there's no reason to be, you know, like, just be yourself and people will come around to you. You don't have to, like, you don't have to milk it, you know? And I think that's right. Kind of like early. It's fascinating because I watched her from the very, very get-go on the campaign trail 22. And at the beginning, Joey, it felt like an SGA presidential campaign. I mean, it just did. And then, you know, we finally, I don't know when you were at Auburn, but the whoever's running for SGA always had the entourage, and they were well dressed, and that's what it looked like. And then finally, it's just like, that doesn't really work in this setting. And just be yourself, you know, show up with your husband or whatever. And then, like, rhetorically, it took some time, and I probably saw a half dozen speeches during that cycle from her, and they all improved over time. But now, just be yourself. People already know who you are. You don't have to sell yourself anymore.
Amen. And I think she's always had, I'll say from the first time I met her, she's always had this X factor. Because I interview a lot of these folks, and she does have the charisma thing, but she does seem a bit more comfortable in her own skin now. And I think it'll bode well. And it's just lean in, be yourself. For all the talk of, because she took over from Shelby and worked for Shelby, she's much more conservative than old Dick Shelby.
That's so the people need to, like, just she may not be Tommy Tuberville land, but she is an upgrade from Richard Shelby. Richard Shelby was nothing but a part of the machinery of Washington, D.C. He never, like, he may have done a lot for the state to change the city of Birmingham when the steel industry left. And I get all the historic legacy there. But if you're, like, really talking about these ideological ideas and this, spiritual warfare battle we're in, like, Britt is far better at this than he ever could have imagined him being.
And I think she doesn't get the greatest, like, score, like Tuberville and Barrymore got on, let's say, their Liberty scores or, Heritage Foundation scores. But I think she's found this lane and this path that there aren't as many, especially young Republicans, who are doing it well, to where she is buddies with John Fetterman. And Fetterman sounds like the more reasonable part of the Democratic Party. And with the socialists taking over even more and more, and then you're going to see this huge fight on the right for the heart and soul of MAGA, I think she's got a great opportunity to be kind of representative of a bridge between a lot of different worlds. And I think that always bodes well down the line, especially if it's not just transactional behind the scenes. It's like genuinely she can have a voice and at least have the ear of a lot of different groups.
Yeah, because it's, the dirty little secret is, like, these guys – they play to a camera. They all do what they got to do.
Yeah.
But, there's some inauthenticity to it, because it's like you overdo it sometimes. And I think this is, like, perfect example here of what's happening in the Democratic Party for decades. They paid lip service to all these whacked out cultural things, right? just playing to that base, playing to that. And they didn't really mean it. They were just doing what they had to do to get their voters engaged. And maybe they were okay with it. It didn't offend their sensibilities or whatever. I'm telling you, man, like, they stirred that pot so much that it's coming back to haunt them finally.
No, and I think, if I had to put a bet down, it'll probably be, like, somebody like AOC. Who ends up getting the nomination, the current way the Democrats are
and going. She'll be George McGovern. She'll get crushed.
That would be my hope, up against Rubio or Vance. I would think so.
But she just doesn't. She comes. I mean, she's not like Hillary Clinton shrill, but she does come off a little, like, she's not going to be a great presidential nominee.
Right. And I don't know. It's hard to square, because there is this, just the best way to sum up the across the board is this general populist angst. When it goes to full-blown socialist envy, I think that's bad. When it goes to full-blown, the Jews are behind everything, I think it looks pretty ugly, going full Fuentes. But if somebody can tap into, like, there is genuine angst, especially with working and middle-class voters, about the cost of everything and opportunities down the road, that's what's going to be kind of the fight over, is, like, who actually speaks to that angst without going off into the deep end.
Yeah, and it takes, like, a generational kind of figure, like an Obama. Like, we could put this aside and you can make everybody happy. The Democrats just don't have that. They don't have somebody. It's just everything. The Democratic Party right now at the very top just seems like too politician-y, right? And
yes.
they never took the right measures to try to, like, back off of that. They never tried to, downgrade that. I mean, Chuck Schumer, he just reeks of D.C., Hakeem Jeffries. And when, like I said, this is, like, the whole point of this discussion. When they would get up there and start talking about how terrible Trump is, it just came off as phony. Like, you don't really believe that we'll never have another free election in this country. Donald Trump is elected. You're just saying that. But there are some people who buy into that. And those are the people who are going to vote against you, too.
Yeah, and it's going to be fascinating to see where that energy and that straight-up envy goes. And right now, from the results in Colorado last night and the results in New York, I mean, it is straight up unabashed socialism. And, you know, that's never really worked. And I mean, the dirty little secret, because Americans like to have this comic book idea of the country's always been this great capitalist bastion, is the socialists were very strong, say, a century ago. The progressive movement were essentially just fellow travelers of communists. If not, you just call yourself a progressive, even though you were a red behind the scenes working with the communists. Yeah, I always love pointing out, like, Henry Wallace, FDR's vice president for a while, was pen pals with Stalin. So it's like they're much weaker than they used to be. And they used to control the three media networks and the big newspapers. And there was this very socialist lean that was dominating the heights of culture. And now they don't dominate it as much. And maybe we're just now seeing them because they're more shrill.
Well, I think they rely on this groupthink mentality. And it's like, everybody knows Donald Trump is a fascist. How do you dispute that? Or 99 out of 101 scientists believe climate change is going to take over. I mean, like, they rely on these, like, sort of assumptions, this groupthink assumptions. But the problem is the platforms they use, the media, it's there's so much democratization of it. They can't really manage the message anymore.
Well, it's like all the cancellations, all that crazy stuff were somewhat over, but people on the left still get canceled in that way. All that cancellation stuff was going on in the 1920s, but it was just behind closed doors within their own socialist closets. And now it's kind of out in the open, and it's Looney Tunes. And for a second, they were able to pull on people's heartstrings, whether with the Me Too or so many other things that you could think of, you know, with racism, they're getting people
Black
canceled.
Black Lives Matter, yeah.
Right. But it's like, and COVID was the mother of them all in that sort of groupthink that you're talking about. But I think once it's like a normal time, people see that stuff. Everyday folks go, well, how does that put food on my table?
Well, yeah. And this was like the real lesson from 2024. Sure, Donald Trump comes back and wins the presidency. But everything that we've been told, all the assumptions, especially like corporate America and Wall Street, we're operating off of. The country's moved to the progressive end. And you need to get on board. If you want to sell your product, you need to have rainbow LGBTQ supporting Nabisco vanilla wafers or whatever. You know, you need to make sure that your branding includes all of this. Ask Bud Light how that worked out. And it turned out, like, none of this is really, this is all fiction. This was all just, like, generated. Right. It's a mirage. You bought into it. And they're like, if the country has moved progressive, like you said, that we had to have this Donald Trump won the popular vote, and you're like, oh crap, we got to do a course correction. And I think that's what's going on.
Yeah. And like, you've seen it continue, like this recent spat with like the ball players, like, and Katie Brett went to bat for it. So did Barry Moore of they wrote the Genesis verse that actually refers to God saying the rainbow represents, I'll never do this to the earth again, when it was Pride Night. And, you know, the MLB almost fined him and got him in trouble. And, you know, there's real cultural pushback from political figures and others saying, no. We are not going to genuflect in front of your fake secular religion anymore. And Vance himself, I saw an interview recently with Michael Knowles where Vance is saying that, you remember that during especially COVID, the In This House We Believe? It's funny. It's almost like this really twisted echo of the Nicene Creed or the Apostles' Creed. Like, people still use that language of I believe in, but it's not in God the Father Almighty. It's I believe in, you know, equal rights, and I believe in this. And for some, they're going to be sold on that. It's been that way for a long time, especially the liberal boomers. God love you folks. But I think more and more folks are waking up to a different message. And it's like where we started. I think there are a lot of young people like Katie, like J.D. Vance, like a Josh Hawley, guys and gals in their, say, early 40s that are speaking a message of Christianity, and I think it's coming from a pretty authentic place. Now, there's always, like you said, the politics, and you play to the cameras and stuff, but
right,
that's a nice comparison. But, you know, a genuine, here's what I read in my Bible this morning and how it's informing my day versus we have to go after Palantir and the Epstein stuff and, like, the conspiratorial crap that's out there. I think one is just going to win the day.
Yeah, I just, people aren't, there was just this false perception of what was going on here in this country. But the thing is that they played to it so much that there are some people who kind of got into it. And now in New York City and apparently in Colorado, and I suspect in more places, Democrats are going to have to own this. They're going to have to figure this out. We talked about this with Bradley J. earlier in the program, Joey. I think when, you know, it's November 3rd, a lot of the prognosticators, the Cook's political report and Larry Sabato got Republicans holding on to the House by two seats. Now, that's redistricting and the ease of gas prices. But the Democrats win. They're not going to win it by a big margin. This is not going to be like a 2006 or 2008 election for Democrats. It's going to look like McCarthy when he tried to be speaker when Republicans won it 4 years ago, and it was just ugly, right? You had Mike Rogers' toupee about to fall off as they're like restraining him. It's going to be uglier than that because they don't really have a figurehead, and the figurehead that they have now, the guy who's, I guess, the technically the figurehead, opposed a lot of the people who won in these primary elections.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Now, I don't know who – I don't think anybody will ever be able to play the Batman villain, Matt Gaetz, on the Democrat side, the way Matt Gaetz played that up. I miss that guy. But you're right. I think the thin margins, even if they take a little bit – of course, they'll still follow through probably with impeachment and all the political theater and hating a Trump. But I'm hopeful. I have a sense that this this having a midterm convention and – I think Trump is really going to put pedal to the metal, as will Vance and Rubio and a lot of folks. Like, I think you're going to see a presidential style try to get out the vote and re-energize. And we need it after we saw, say, the energy levels in this primary cycle.
I mean, if you just play up the America 250 to get this you know, this patriotism thing going, and, you know, it could work in Republicans' favor. They just got to do it right. The Supreme Court decision yesterday gives the NRSC a cash advantage, and they could probably pump the brakes on a lot of this craziness. I think, like,
well, and then,
yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, one of the ironies of all this, I like to lean on people that aren't political in my life. Like, my brother's not a very political guy. I guess he's kind of, you know, grew up in Alabama, fairly conservative, but not real political. And it's this European effect. All these folks coming over here for that Communist Plot soccer, falling in love with Buc-ee's and all sorts of American culture. Like, that's when I noticed the vibe shift beyond anything just explicitly political. It's like, oh, no, our country, for all its issues, is pretty freaking awesome. And why don't we celebrate that? And I think the folks that take that mantle in politics will end up victorious.
Joey, folks want to find you online. How can they do so?
At the Joey Clark on X or Joey Clark Live on YouTube.
Joey Clark, ladies and gentlemen. Joey, thanks for making time.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right, let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Just to send it on down the line. Hello, West Virginia coal miner. Let me thank you for your time. You work a 40-hour week for a living. Just to send it on down the line. This is for the one who drives the big rig.
First thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town. Not
welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us.
But Mama tried.
On this Wednesday morning, Scott Steinhagen will be with us in the 11 o'clock hour. So make sure you stay tuned for that. 251-343-0106. Let's see here. Sydney. Back in 1995, I worked for the Mobile Museum of Art. They were making their plans to rebuild and revamp. Every single meeting I attended, I voiced my opinion. The museum should move downtown later on. When the cruise ships came, it made even more sense. Did anybody listen to me? Nope. They didn't then, and they don't now. I also voiced my opinion. We should build up the waterfront similar to the New Orleans Riverwalk. Again, no one listened to me. The problem with the Mobile waterfront, it's maybe it's just a little industrial, you know, because you're looking over at a shipyard or whatever. It's not quite as picturesque. Now, I guess of New Orleans, you're looking across to what, Algiers or whatever. But you're right. I don't know. I mean, it's always been a kind of a fascination of mine about the Western Shore and the whole saga there. That's sort of where you had the port and the, you know, it's, like I said, very industrial. It's Brooklyn-y. Is there a whole lot you could have done there? They put an Air Force base there, you know? Maybe there just wasn't this romanticization of the waterfront like there is today. You know, because that's kind of been a trend of the last 50, 60 years is to build up your waterfront. I mean, how often do we go to the beach, you know, in the middle part of the last century? It's become more of a thing. That people like to look at the water. That's an opportunity there. Mr. Valentine. Hey, Sydney, you would have been right when in the 1990s, probably. Surely we're not starting to beat the baseball dead horse again. Only benefactor is the stadium salesman. Well, it's like, if I had my way, I do think Mobile's a big enough city to have a double-A baseball team. It's a baseball town. It's Hank Aaron's birthplace. Willie McCovey? Ozzie Smith? 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.